This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Damian Woody joins us right now. Wood, I heard that, was watching it, the impassioned plea that you were making. I was trying to do the same damn thing when I opened the show today. But you know, you're still going to get people pushing back, trying to blame others. So Christopher Johnson, like, and you know this too, Christopher Johnson is not going to come out and say, you know what, yeah, we screwed up, we didn't hire the right coach. Like, he's not going to say that. But I feel like him saying that the guy is, you know, the guy's a genius. All right, he's a genius, so he's working with imbeciles then? Like, all you're saying is then it's other people that are failing, not the coach, right?
Yeah, listen, Alan, here's my outside of Peyton Manning, what has Adam Gase accomplished as an offensive coach?
Jay Cutler didn't suck once.
His offenses has never finished in the top half of the league one time outside of you know, the time he worked with Peyton Manning. Not one time. In his last three years as being a play caller in this league, the highest that offense ever ranked was 26th in the league. 26. Think about that. In the last 3 years, we're in an offensive driven league. Okay, this is what the league is all about. And the highest that Adam Gase called offense has finished is 26th in the league. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And I just, you know, listen, Christopher Johnson pays the bills, pay the big bucks. He's entitled to his own opinion. But I know what I see when I'm watching the games. And I see confusion. I see the team getting overwhelmed. I just don't see overall improvement from this Jets team.
Now, what do you say to those who say, well, they finished 6-2 last year, they finished strong, they got to 7-9 after a 1-8 start, that, you know, like, what do you say to those who try to point that out, saying that team didn't let go of the rope, they didn't ship the cars home after, you know, the 1-8 start?
Here's what I would say. You know, when I played with the New England Patriots, Coach Belichick used to always say, every team is different. Every team is different. So, yes, the Jets finished 6-2 the second half of the season, but this is a whole different team, Alan. I mean, think about it. We're in the middle of a pandemic, no off-season program, you know, training camp is all twisted. How can you possibly carry over 6-2 from last year to this team? There's no Robbie Anderson. There's so many different new guys on this team. You can't possibly carry over 6-2. This team is going to stand on its own merits. Forget 2019. We're talking 2020.
So what are you the Sam Darnold criticism was something I also got a little frustrated with too, because I feel like it's the head, like you mentioned it, you know, Peyton Manning, he had success with an experienced superstar. This is a young, you know, we see Ryan Tannehill. I heard Greeny this morning, and it was absolutely, like, everything that he broke down was so on point. Ryan Tannehill goes to Tennessee and suddenly becomes the quarterback that everybody thought he could be when he was in Miami. He never really reached any of that stuff in Miami. Well, he got hurt a lot. Okay, fine, but did he ever look like a guy that was trending the way he's trending now in Tennessee? Sam Darnold, people are pointing to and saying, you know, by now, Sam should be getting it. But I look at it as he's a young quarterback on his second coach in his second system, and you hand him a playbook, and he had to go back to you and say, can we pare this thing down? Because this is a little much for me to digest right now. Like, I feel like you might be a genius as an offensive mind, but you're not a developer, and you need a developer at head coach. That's what I'm seeing here. Like, so do you look at anything and say, well, Sam also has to be better?
Well, let me say I'm a huge fan of Sam Darnold. I am. I truly feel like Sam Darnold can be that guy. He's not there yet. And I think the reason I'm so impassioned, Alan, is because I know how critical this year is. you got Sam Darnold at the end of this year, this off next offseason, the Jets are going to have to make a decision about a fifth-year option for Sam Darnold. And maybe they've already come to the conclusion that they're going to exercise it. But in my opinion, like, it's at an incomplete right now. We don't know. We don't know if Sam Darnold is there yet. So when I look at Sam Darnold, particularly in the game against Buffalo, I see a guy who the game still looks fast to him. You know, he's all over the place. Yep. You know, running out of the pocket, fidgeting with his footwork. You know, he just didn't look – he looked unsure about himself. And I'm just thinking to myself, this is a guy that's in his third year, second year in the same system. We should be seeing a guy that's more relaxed, more calm, and more assured of his abilities to execute within the system. And we just didn't see that against Buffalo. Listen, I get it. Buffalo's defense, yes, they're one of the best in the league, no question. But we also should have seen the Jets' offense look – much more efficient, especially coming from the quarterback position.
All right, so before we finish on the Jets and we move on to some other topics, I do want to ask you, though, about Mekhi Becton and what you saw from him in his debut.
I thought it was great. I thought it was great. Now, listen, it wasn't perfect. He made some mistakes, but, Alan, think about this. The guy didn't have an offseason. He didn't have an off-season training camp. He only had a few days to really practice in pads. You had no preseason games to tune up, and you go out there, and you're the best lineman on the team. He was listen, anyone who watched the tape, he was the best lineman on the team. And there's no question about it. I am so ecstatic for Mekhi, not only because he's from the same area I'm from in Virginia, but just he has such a bright future ahead of him. All he has to do is just keep working, keep grinding, stay humble. The sky is truly the limit for this young man.
Are you looking forward to it? This is going to be an interesting matchup with him and Nick Bosa this weekend, isn't it?
Oh, man. Listen, I honestly, I could care less about everything else. I'm a lineman at heart.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see Mekhi Becton go toe-to-toe with Nick Bosa because Nick Bosa is the truth. Mm-hmm. And if Mekhi can go out there and hold his own against Nick Bosa, man, that would be huge for the Jets organization.
I almost feel like if I'm Sam, I'm always going to the left side. Like, I'm just constantly just going to go to that side and stay around him in any way because I imagine I'll get a little bit of space just because he's around, right?
That is a huge human being that can move well. So, yeah, if I'm Sam, I'm gravitating towards that guy.
Yeah. No, that side of the line seemed to be all right. It was the other side that struggled. But for the Giants' perspective now, as we watch them, they also drafted a lineman in Andrew Thomas. I thought he also held up real well in what was a challenging game for him as Dupree was in that backfield all game long. But I thought he actually looked really good too.
I did. I made that comment on Twitter. Just watching him, I thought he held his own extremely well. You know, Pittsburgh defense, no joke. It's you know, it's kind of like what I talked about with the Buffalo Bills. They're going to have one of the best defenses in the league too, and they got two outstanding pass rushers in Watt and Dupree. And he did a really good job being once again no preseason games, and you're playing left tackle in the National Football League. That is very hard. That's very hard to do. So kudos to Andrew Thomas in his showing.
We're talking with Damian Woody. I was also noticing something else you did on social media, which is respond to something that Tiki Barber said about Saquon Barkley. And it got a lot of – when Tiki said it got a lot of negative response. Could it look like he was being hypercritical of someone that played obviously the same position as he with the Giants? And the fact that his run blocking is a major issue. And part of the reason why – I don't know if he is an every down back. And you kind of backed it up. Can you explain what you see out of Saquon and maybe an area that he's got to get better at? And for Giants fans, instead of looking at it through Tiki's a hater, look at through from your eyes as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, one of the critical things that any running back has to do in order to be a three-down back in the National Football League, you have to be able to pass protect because you have to be able to protect your quarterback. And as talented as Saquon Barkley is, I've gone on the record saying I think Saquon Barkley is the most talented running back in the National Football League. That is an area of his game that he has to get better at. Okay, and Giant fans need to come to grips with that. I've seen it last year, and I've seen it, you know, against Monday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. His inability right now to be able to pass protect is a liability because you can't be out there. What's going to happen when teams know you can't pass protect? They're sending people at you every which way until you figure it out. So we can talk about all the great things, that all the flashy highlight things that Saquon Barkley does, but if he doesn't clear that up, then it's just going to hinder his game. To me, that's the difference between Saquon and Zeke Elliott. Zeke Elliott is one of the best in the league at pass protection. That's what separates them a little bit.
Now with Saquon, because knowing him as a, you know, his personally, you know, he's a guy that gives his all. Like, he's not a guy that's cutting corners. He doesn't get where he is because he's cutting corners. Is this a will issue? Is it a recognition issue? What is the issue to fix with him? Because, you know, you might say, oh, he doesn't want to get dirty. He doesn't want to block. Maybe he doesn't want to get hurt. It can't be that with a guy like Saquon. He doesn't seem to have that kind of character.
No, you're exactly right, Alan. You know, Saquon Barkley is one of the most competitive guys that I've seen into the National Football League in quite some time. He has all of the physical traits and attributes to be able to do it. I always say when it comes to pass protection, it's technique, and it's just a desire to just want to stick your nose in. Listen, it's dirty work. You're not going to get the glory, but at the end of the day, if you stick your nose in there with a blitzing linebacker or a safety and give Daniel Jones maybe a half a second more to deliver that big play down the field, man, to me, as a teammate, when I see that on film, I get more excited about that than the actual play itself. So, again, it's something he needs to clean up. He's more than capable of doing it.
It is something I imagine, too, with that offensive line, which, you know, is obviously was under fire already after game one. People have talked about the Giants offensive line for a long time and the issues it has. It is something you would think that if he could clean that up, or if they could figure out how to clean that up, does that make the offensive line better? Is it something that simple, Wood?
Yeah, well, listen, you know, in pass protection, you got to have everyone on the same page. The line, the quarterback, the running backs, the receivers. So if you get your running back on the same page and able to execute those blocks, you give your quarterback more time to be able to see downfield. And so, again, I'm going to say it's not – Saquon Barkley is more than capable of doing that. He just got to hone in his technique and just stick his nose in there and get it.
All right, now I know we got Thursday Night Football tonight. It's going to be an interesting one, Bengals and the Browns. I mean, I'm really curious about that game on many levels, all the different storylines, including Burrow, but also what's going on there with Baker and Odell. It's hard not to want to watch that game, but you and I both know what we're watching tonight. And that is a game six with the Islanders and the Lightning. In a game that, like, I mean... Honestly, are you watching? Are you? I don't know how to explain it because I, you know. And one of our producers, John Winthrop, said, "Ask Woody how he became an Islanders fan." And I know the story because I've been following you. But for those who are like listening and saying, "Like, how does Damian Woody get into the Islanders?" Tell the story about what made you a fan of this team.
Yeah, man. So last season, during football season, you know, Jets, Giants, they were just awful, awful. Not only just Giants. The Knicks were bad. The Nets were bad. The whole sports thing seemed like
so. It was basically just another year in New York in the last decade.
Basically, yes, basically. And so I was getting tweets from Islanders fans like, "Hey Woody, check out the Islanders. They're winning." And then the Islanders tweeted like, "Hey, over here, little guys over here, we're actually balling." And I think they were in the middle of a 17 game winning streak last
correct.
Year. You know, whatever
yeah.
it was. And so
right.
I'm like, okay, I see you guys. And one thing led to another. I got in contact with the people over the Islanders. They invited me out to a game. And, I went to subsequent games. And I just became hooked. Not only myself, but my whole family. I brought my whole family along. And now we sit back and we watch all of these games. And Alan, it's so fun, man, because the game is so fast-paced. And I'm still trying to learn the game, all the nuances, but it's just really exciting, especially playoff hockey, man. There's really nothing like it.
Oh, it's intense. I'm trying to get Bart more into it. Now, he's a Detroit guy, so he'll always, you know, he'll always favor the Red Wings. He brings up, you know, he does this thing where, like, I bring up hockey, and he just starts going, yeah, my guys, Yzerman, Fedorov. Like, he just rattles off the roster from the late 90s. Like, that's his way. But I'm trying to get into it. But the one thing I think that I would feel would be so easily of an appeal to a football player is what we've seen in playoff hockey, which is, I'm pissed at you, let's drop gloves and let's fight. Can you imagine in the NFL, if it was, all you had to do was sit out for a couple of plays, if like tear off a helmet and just start, you know, just going right at the jaw of an opponent because you're just mad at him about a play. Would that be, would dirty hits be completely out of the league if you could do it where, like, let's say a defenseless receiver just gets completely destroyed, and one of the linemen then go over to the guy and just obliterates him.
Man, let me tell you something, man. If that were implemented in the league, I don't even know if we would get through a whole game. I really don't. I don't even know if we get through a whole game, because there would be fisticuffs every other play, because there are cheap shots, dirty hits, all types of stuff that happened throughout the course of a game. And if you said, hey, you're allowed to take off your helmet and go at it, I don't think we would be able to finish the game, quite honest with you.
You'd also need bigger, you'd need more Ed Hockleys, because if you see the linesmen in the NHL are pretty big dudes, because they got to break this stuff up. You know, and these guys are just throwing haymakers at each other, and you've got to get in there and break that up. I'm not sure too many, you know, line judges are going to step in between a linebacker and a, you know, an offensive tackle.
Let me tell you something. Could you imagine Ed Hockley trying to step in between a Mekhi Becton and Aaron Donald?
No,
that would look crazy. That would look crazy.
By the way, you guys showing Aaron Donald today on Get Up. Like, there were a couple of hits that he threw. I didn't notice them when I watched the game against the Rams, but when you guys played that reel, there's one where he runs over. He literally knocks over two offensive linemen like they're bowling pins.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Aaron, and what makes it crazy, Alan, is Aaron Donald's not the biggest guy. He's like 280, 285, but he creates so much force and power that he's just completely wrecking havoc. And obviously, the best play was when he picked up Zeke Elliott with one arm and and picked him up off the ground and shoved him into the lap of Dak Prescott. Like, you don't see that. We're talking about grown men. You don't see that.
It is unbelievable. All right, Wood, before I let you go, I want one more thing. It's the Pac-12 is now going to have their meeting, and it just seems pretty obvious. Big Ten's back, so you know the Pac-12 is going to follow. That's generally what they do. But the Big Ten coming back, I have to, again, and I'm stealing from your Twitter, because you react on all different things. But to have the one president from Northwestern say that it's not about political pressure and it's not about money, you know, they basically, it's unanimous decision of medical experts. In your opinion, the Big Ten coming back and playing this football season, what is it about?
Well, first of all, my reaction was, child, please. Like, are you really? Like, you really going to say something like, people aren't stupid. We know how much money, how many billions of dollars are at stake here. And for you to come out and say, oh, this had nothing to do with money or this or that, it just strictly had to do with the medical. Yeah, okay. Like, I'm not buying that one bit. I will say, though, that I do give them some credit for, you know, bringing awareness to the medical side of it, because so many people were wanting to dismiss it and was in such a rush to, you know, get, you know, play the season. And it's just like, wait a minute, man. Like, everybody wants a season, but who's advocating for the players?
And well, I know the players, see, the thing is, the players want to play.
But you know,
they want to play.
The players wanted to book. I know, but Alan, listen, we both have children. And sometimes with your kids, you got to save them from themselves sometimes. And so, you know, that's why I do give some kudos to the presidents for stepping in and say, you know what, yes, you want to play, but we're dealing with something real serious. So maybe I have to step in and save you from yourself in this particular case.
I just feel like if I'm now a soccer player for Ohio State, I'm saying, whoa, you can play football. Well, so we can't play, though? Like that. I just feel like it just starts to open up more and more of that issue of everything else being shut down. Although, again, selfishly, you're playing football, that's good. Basketball season, they're already talking about they're just going to push it back, but they are planning on starting a college basketball season. My son plays hockey, so thank God. Hopefully we'll have a hockey season for him, and that'll be great. But with the NFL, though, last thing for you, with the NFL, after week one, the news was good on the testing. It's really been, you know, the first time teams will play against each other. I know there was I think it was everybody tested at the Thursday night opener, that you had basically what one groundskeeper. Aside from that, there was really nothing else that came from it as far as COVID goes. Do you feel like after week one goes through, if the league survived week one and no major issues, that they should be able to get through a whole season without anything that would cause a stoppage like we saw in baseball? Or are you still concerned?
I'm real encouraged, but man, things can turn so quickly. I'm cautiously optimistic that we will be able to, you know, go start to finish and finish this thing off. I think the league has done a masterful job of the COVID testing, and obviously, more importantly, the players buying in and being selfish, because that's really what it's going to take in order to finish this thing. The players have to be selfish and limit their exposure to other people.
Woody, great to talk to you as always, man. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm going to be a little anxious, but it's playoff hockey. You got to win.
I'm the same way, Alan. We're going to see if we can grind this thing out.
All right, love it. Good to talk to you, my man.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.